defacing the nation.
Wow.
Because we have A, COVID-19.
Yeah.
B, mass protests.
Mm-hmm.
And C, an obsession on the parts of people to go to our national monuments.
Yep.
They were even doing it to the Lincoln Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing it to something called the Emancipation Statue.
Yeah.
I saw last night on a news report. And they're obsessed, these looters, these vandals, with going to our national monuments and destroying them, defacing them, graffitiing them, toppling them over.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do is talk about that today. By the way, they have a name for this. They call it the cancel culture movement.
Oh, boy.
And they think they're reacting against America's slavery-oriented past in doing so. But what we're going to talk about today is what is really behind this from a ideological perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And also from a prophetic perspective.
It's really good that we're going to step back from our normal, you know, values-oriented program and do a touchy-feely program.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right.
A warm, fuzzy program.
We're tackling the issues head on here. And our biblical entry point that we've used for the last number of shows is Daniel 7, verse 19, 23, and 25, which talks about a coming beast who will crush down and devour the whole earth.
Yep.
And from that little beast will come an antichrist figure who will make alterations in times and law. So we believe that the new world order, you know, basically is coming.
Yes, sir.
And we also believe that the United States of America, a free and independent and prosperous United States, is really the very last thing, you know, standing in the way of this coming new world order. And so actually the destruction of the United States, the toppling of the United States is on the minds of these one worlders or globalists that want to bring in maximum, you know, government control over the earth.
That's right.
So, goodness, how does the cancel culture movement play into this? What are the spiritual reasons behind this cancel culture movement? Well, I think I tried to just articulate that.
Mm-hmm.
It's denying American exceptionalism, American greatness, trying to sort of demonize America's past.
Yeah.
So America can be reduced to something less than what she is, and she'll just fit right in, you know, with the family of nations. And so this is what's going on in our culture right now. So you look at our preview slide here, and you'll see the six things that we're going to go over today. But the first of the six is what's happening in the news. It's related to the destruction of the historical monuments of the United States.
Right.
And we have this exchange that took place on The View, not necessarily a program I'm fascinated
on. Of thought and critical thinking. Yeah.
And it's an article from Newsbusters written by Kristen Marsh, and it's largely talking about one of the hosts on The View and her perspective on this defacing of national monuments, which apparently she thinks is great.
Yeah.
Her name is Sunny Hostin. And why don't you read that to us so we can orient ourselves to what's happening?
All right. This is a somewhat lengthy article, so just bear with us, folks. Here we go. The left has moved on from toppling statues of Confederate generals to now defacing and erasing any person associated with America's early history. After statues of George Washington and Ulysses S. Grant were vandalized in Baltimore and San Francisco, respectively, the Museum of National History decided to remove a statue of Teddy Roosevelt as well. The hosts of The View discussed this trend on Monday's show, which Sunny Hostin praised as the removal of America's racist, quote, revisionist history, close quote. After her co-host showed support for the movement, co-host Meghan McCain wondered how far the left would go in trying to remove every mention of American history. She pointed out that Yale University and the state of New York are named after slave traders. Hmm. So, should we rename those two? But Sonny Hostin claimed that attitude was a defensive one born out of being taught that you were, quote, superior, close quote. She also condemned anyone even owning artwork depicting the founding fathers and others. Quoting now, I think again it goes to education, right? And I can understand why people feel threatened and uncomfortable about tearing things down, because if you had been taught your entire life that this is your history, that is something that you should be proud of. You have been taught something that is your heritage, and you have been taught of your superiority. But, and that superiority is based on the alleged inferiority of others. There is tension there. And unfortunately, again, it's this revisionist history that so many of us have been taught. And I think it really lies, the solution lies in education. Because if you're taught that George Washington is not the person you thought he was, if you're taught perhaps that Teddy Roosevelt is not the person you thought he was, or Ulysses S. Grant is not the person you thought he was, or General Lee is not the person you thought he was, I think you would think twice about having a statue of him up in a park or of him in your home, close quote. Hostin seemed to be suggesting it was white Americans who were taught their, quote, superior, close quote, because before this part above, she said, quote, I think rather than put up these monuments to these men who may have been, you know, our founding fathers, they certainly were flawed men to my ancestors, close quote. That was her last comment in a rant accusing George Washington of being a racist who, quote, tortured, close quote, his slaves. Quoting again, we'll see this thing. We spent like $40 million on these statues. I think that you should spend the money on education, because I think that's really what the problem here is. What we have been taught, what you were taught, Joy, what I was taught, what Whoopi was taught, probably what Megan was taught in our schools was, you know, revisionist history. We weren't taught the real history. We were taught that George Washington freed his slaves. He wrote that in his will, but he didn't free his slaves. He actually spent the last year of his life relentlessly pursuing slaves that tried to run away. He was a horrible slave owner. He owned hundreds of slaves at his death. They were not released. We learned he had wooden teeth. He didn't have wooden teeth. He had in his mouth the teeth of his slaves that he had pulled and made fake dentures, right? Consisting of the teeth of his slaves who he tortured. And so why should there be a monument to George Washington? Because he was a terrible slave owner. While he was a founding father, this type of history was hidden from people. And I only learned about it when I took African American history when I went to college. I learned the same history you learned, Joy. And so I think rather than put up these monuments to these men who may have been, you know, our founding fathers, they certainly were flawed men to my ancestors, close quote. Hostin saying Washington personally, quote, tortured his slaves by pulling their teeth is a gross exaggeration that the historical text does not support. Furthermore, she makes these claims with absolute certainty when even Mount Vernon acknowledges that there isn't a lot of information to go on with regard to the details of Washington paying for enslaved people's teeth. Towards the end, McCain asked, quote, I think the question I have is how far does this go? Are we talking about removing Mount Rushmore if we don't like our founding fathers, close quote. As Hostin started to answer seemingly in support of removing Mount Rushmore, Whoopi Goldberg ended that already long conversation to go to a commercial.
Wowzer. So, according to this host on The View, you can't have any artwork depicting the Founding Fathers.
Nope.
Because that's reinforcing racism.
Right.
That's born out of a worldview of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have any statues or artwork of George Washington, Ulysses S. Grant, Teddy Roosevelt, General Lee.
Mm-hmm.
We know that George Washington was a racist who tortured his slaves. After all, he tore their teeth out.
Yeah, ripped them
apparently.
Out. Yeah.
Now, before we went live, you were saying you did a little research into that.
I did.
And the article here, you know, acknowledges that mm-hmm. Mount Vernon,
mm-hmm.
which might know something about the history of George Washington,
probably.
Acknowledges that there's not a lot of information to go on with mm-hmm. regards to the details of Washington paying for enslaved people's teeth.
Right, right.
What did you discover?
Well, what I discovered was, first of all, there is literally one document that says anything about it, that has slaves and teeth in the same document, only one, and happens to be a ledger mm-hmm. that George Washington kept. And in that ledger, he is writing regarding his dentist mm-hmm. to whom he paid a certain amount of money to have 9 teeth provided for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you do a little research, you find out that this dentist was advertising in the local paper of his need for teeth. And so he was actually paying people who would offer or volunteer teeth for the purpose of using them in dentures.
Mm-hmm.
Now that sounds rather strange to us, but it just so happens that at that time in history, that was very, very commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it wasn't uncommon to use the teeth from dead people.
Wow.
All right. So they were getting teeth, bring them to a dentist. George Washington needed some teeth. He went to his dentist and he said, "Hey, I need some teeth," paid some money and he got some teeth. Now that's the extent of it. And everything I've read says that historians can only make an educated guess mm-hmm. about whether or not this was, you know, he was involved in taking these teeth away from slaves and all. There's no evidence for that whatsoever. This was a very common practice for the day.
Wowzer.
Yeah.
So she's accusing America of historical revisionism, and you're saying that's basically what she's doing.
Right, and there's all kinds of articles out there that people have written about this very issue, painting Washington in a bad light,
mm-hmm.
but there's no evidence for it.
And we even have a slide on this. She indicated or intimated that we need to get rid of Mount Rushmore. There you
mm-hmm.
see a picture of Mount Rushmore being ripped in half. So that goes under the, because that promotes white supremacy. You know what's interesting about this whole thing is the conservative in this exchange is supposed to be Meghan McCain.
Right.
She's the only one that has a rational voice. And if you know anything about her, she's very liberal.
She is.
She comes from John McCain, who was always a thorn in the side of conservatives, even though he had an R for Republican in his name. I think Meghan McCain is pro-abortion.
Yeah.
You know, she believes in climate change, mm-hmm. anthropogenic climate change,
mm-hmm.
and so she's the only conservative. She herself isn't even a conservative,
mm-hmm.
but she's the only one that acts like she has a brain.
Well,
on the show.
Yeah.
Show the View. And the reason that we wanted to read this to you is because it epitomizes what's happening in our culture.
Yeah.
We're in a season now where the historical monuments of the United States of America are being vandalized and defaced all week long.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the last couple of weeks this has been going on.
Yeah.
And they're doing it on the grounds that those images or icons promote, you know, racial supremacy of whites over blacks.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brother Jim, as if that weren't enough, now they're doing it with Jesus.
Yeah.
I think we have a couple of screenshots of this, but here is a screenshot of a guy named Sean King, who was a leading Black Lives Matter activist. We also have a companion article talking about this in discern.com by Adam Ford, June 22nd, 2020. But just for the sake of time, unless you've got something else there underlined, but what does he say here in these screenshots? There's two tweets he put up recently.
So apparently he's responding to somebody's question or comment. He says, "Yes, all murals and stained glass windows of white Jesus and his European mother and their white friends should also come down. They are a gross form of white supremacy, created as tools of oppression, racist propaganda. They should all come down."
And then the second slide, what does that say? He's just getting warmed up.
Apparently. Yeah, he's just warming up. Yes, I think the statues of the white European they claim is Jesus should also come down. They are a form of white supremacy, always have been. In the Bible, when the family of Jesus wanted to hide and blend in, guess where they went? Egypt, not Denmark. Tear them down.
So there we have it. Jesus is a white oppressor. Mm. He had a European mother. Did you know that?
You know, I'm learning all kinds of stuff.
The reality of the situation is we have a genealogy in Matthew chapter 1,
yeah,
verses 1 through 18, that links Jesus back to A. David, B. Abraham, mm-hmm, because he was Jewish.
Yes.
A member of a minority,
yes,
race.
Yes.
His mother, Mary, was Jewish.
Yes.
All of the disciples were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And if folks, we don't have time to turn there, but Romans chapter 9 verse 5 tells you that Jesus was as Jewish as they come.
Mm-hmm.
He's a physical descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Right.
So I don't even know, you know, I read stuff like this and to me it's laughable. I don't know what they're speaking about other than maybe he's talking about our rendition of Jesus, but the,
yeah,
true Jesus was not a white,
no,
supremacist or an oppressor. He was himself one of the oppressed, living under the heavy military reign and taxation of Rome,
mm-hmm, yeah,
yeah, and was a member of a minority race.
Yeah. And was there even a white European location at that point in time? I'm not sure there was. I mean,
you know,
they're not as we understand it today.
I mean, my understanding is the gospel doesn't even get into Europe until Paul's second missionary journey,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know, beginning in Acts 16.
Yeah.
But Jesus himself, nor the original apostles, do they have anything to do with being European,
no,
supremacists or colonialists.
No, no.
And I guess what we're trying to point out is how severe this is right, mm, now, this cancel culture mentality,
mm-hmm,
because they're using it to attack even architecture and artifacts,
yeah,
from Christianity,
yeah,
you know, itself.
It's propaganda.
And it's not just buildings and stained glass windows and churches and statues people are going after. Now the cancel culture movement has put the following under suspicion. The movie Mary Poppins. The movie Gone with the Wind. And right down to Aunt Jemima syrup. Those are all taboos now because supposedly those are props or reinforcers of white supremacy.
And now they're getting in my backyard. I like Aunt Jemima.
And so that's what we wanted to go over here with Roman numeral one, just to show people what is going on. Now what we want to get into here is this attack on biblical historical monuments. Is there actually a biblical basis for having a historical monument? I mean, are historical monuments in and of themselves idolatrous?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is they are not, because when we go to the book of Joshua,
mm-hmm,
chapter 4, verses 19 through 24, God explains that historical monuments are actually one of the great tools that can be used to retain your culture.
That's exactly
or to
right.
transfer cultural knowledge from one generation,
yeah,
to the next. In fact, in God's own nation, you know, the nation of Israel, there were historical monuments everywhere,
mm-hmm,
not the least of which are the 12 stones,
mm-hmm,
set up by Joshua. And we have a map here of him moving across the Jordan River, and God did the miracle there.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And they went to a place called Gilgal. And mm-hmm, when they were at Gilgal, they were told to set up these 12 stones,
yep,
as a historical monument. And God gives the basis for this in Joshua chapter 4, verses 19 through 24. And it's one of the passages I think the Lord brought to my mind.
That's great.
To demonstrate the importance of history.
And this isn't the only place in the Bible where you see,
no,
something that's happening, but shall I read that?
Absolutely, please.
All right, Joshua chapter 4, verses 9 through 24, reading again from the New American Standard 95 update. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. Those 12 stones which they had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. He said to the sons of Israel, When your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed, that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever.
So they crossed, they set up these 12 stones, and then God explains the significance of these.
Mm-hmm.
These 12 stones, which they had taken from the Jordan, because one of these days your kids are going to point to those stones and say, hey,
yep,
Father, mm-hmm, what are these stones all about?
Yep.
And that becomes their teaching moment.
Yes.
For explaining what God did there at the Jordan River.
Exactly.
And notice it says when the children ask their fathers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the transfer of cultural knowledge is to take place from father to son.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, from parent to child.
Right.
Within the family unit. And you're going to have a teaching opportunity to explain, number one, what God did at the Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, you're going to be able to explain what he did 40 years earlier.
Exactly.
With the crossing of the Red Sea.
Mm-hmm.
So two historical events. Mm-hmm. And then you're gonna, and then it says in verse 24, so that all the peoples of the earth, not a handful, but all the peoples of the earth,
mm-hmm,
may know the hand of the Lord, the hand of the Lord is almighty, so that they may fear the Lord, they may fear the Lord your God forever. So the historical monument was a pretty big deal in terms of retaining cultural knowledge.
So what's interesting here, what you just said, I thought was really fascinating. This monument, if you will, was not just for the children of Israel. It was for the unbelieving nations that surrounded them that would come upon that monument and say, well, why is that there?
Yeah.
And then they could seek out the information, and guess what they would do? They would learn about the God of Israel.
Yeah. And sadly, the nation of Israel, to a large extent, did not do what they were told.
That's right, too.
Because we come to the book of Judges, which follows the book of Joshua. Judges chapter 2 and verse 10.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about a generation that arose that didn't know anything about God.
And like, how did that happen?
Yeah. You want to read that to us?
Let me read that. Judges 2, 10. All that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel.
So that's what happens when you don't follow God's pattern of diligently teaching history within your families. You have a whole generation that arises that doesn't know anything about the past.
Hey, this is prophetic. This is prophetic for our day.
Yeah, because that's what's happening.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. And this is why we're concerned about the vandalization.
Yeah.
And the destruction of all of these historical monuments, for the simple reason that if those monuments don't exist, the teaching moments don't exist.
That's exactly right.
And you can't explain the past of our country. And we believe God's hand, just like it was on Israel, was on the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those teaching opportunities to explain the hand of God, the miracles of God,
right,
you don't have that opportunity anymore.
Right.
And so a lot of people think that historical monuments in and of themselves are wicked,
mm-hmm,
or evil, but here you find God, you know, actually commanding the nation of Israel to make such historical monuments.
That's true.
And a lot of people say, well, all these statues that are coming down, I mean, don't you see the sin in the lives of these heroes from the past? Don't you know they own slaves and all of these kinds of things, and they want to tear down the statues of slave owners, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm of the view you ought to leave the statues up there because their presence demonstrates the progress,
absolutely,
that we've made as a country.
Absolutely.
We are the only country on the face of the earth coming from perhaps a tainted background related to slavery and sin that actually did something,
mm-hmm,
within just over 100 years, you know, or so, mm-hmm, of our founding, to remedy the problem.
Yeah.
And so those monuments are reminders of the progress that we've made.
Isn't it interesting that our Bible very similarly,
yeah,
reveals the sin of key characters, main characters in the Bible. They're not removed.
Yeah, I was going to mention that in my notes.
I jumped ahead of you.
No, that's good you bring it up, because a lot of people say that those are all negative things, but what's wrong with having a negative historical monument?
Sure.
Isn't the biblical record, doesn't the biblical record in 2 Samuel 11 and 12 talk about David's sin with adultery
right.
and then later murder and then
yes.
lying to cover it up? It doesn't try to whitewash that or pretend like it didn't happen.
Yep.
It's there as sort of a reminder of what not to do
exactly.
and what not to go back to.
Yeah.
And you lose all of this when the culture is canceled.
You lose the teaching moment. I like so much what you said there.
The teaching moment. So let's move to number three. This canceling of our history that we're seeing is actually what I would call part of a long-standing agenda.
Yes.
This idea that we're going to cancel the culture is really nothing new. The Marxists have been promoting this idea for a long time. Mm-hmm. I believe this, Brother Jim, that we are already in the initial stages of a communist revolution.
Yeah.
You know, here in the United States. And the reason I say that is Marxists want to pit one economic class against another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we have today.
Yeah.
Do you mind reading this excerpt from a Facebook post by Amir Kanner on June the 25th, 2020?
All right. This is entitled The Vocabulary of a Marxist. And this is what he writes. Are you a victim or a victor? Marxists demand you see yourself as the former. As Marx himself wrote, quoting, "The history of all hitherto existing society is the history of class struggles. Oppressor and oppressed stand in constant opposition to one another. They carry on an uninterrupted fight," close quote. That's from the Communist Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
Professional agitators want you to see yourself as a perpetual victim of someone else's failings. They ensure you do so by endlessly categorizing all society into two groups, oppressed and oppressors. Don't believe the lie. The end of socialist road is a dead end of misery for any person or country. And then, there, you want me to stop there?
No, that's good. We'll get to the quotes from Karl Marx and others in just a second. But, you know, the bottom line with Marxism is class warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And Saul Alinsky spoke of this, how to topple an existing civilization.
Yeah.
And replace it with a Marxist paradigm is you have to go into that city and you have to find the points of tension.
Right.
Which exist in any civilization.
Of course.
And you've got to get the classes at war with each other. Mm-hmm. And the reason this issue of race is being exploited like it is today from the hand of Marxists is this is where America is vulnerable. Because we have had racial tension in this country.
Yeah.
Now we did something to correct it. But the tension is still there.
Right.
And a lot of the bitterness is still there.
Right.
And so that becomes something that needs to be exploited.
Yes.
To bring in a communist revolution.
Yeah.
So we are already in, I would say, the initial stages of a communist revolution here in the United States. And the second phase of it is you have to eradicate the history of that particular culture.
Right.
Because the Marxists have given us their playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a quote from Karl Marx.
Quoting, "The first battlefield is to rewrite history. Take away the heritage of a people, and they are easily persuaded."
See, people that don't know their history, according to Karl Marx, are easily persuaded. So we have phase one, class warfare. And now what we've seen on our TV screens the last 2 weeks is phase two.
Yes.
Through this attack on historical monuments.
Right.
It's really an attack on the knowledge of what our culture is all about.
Yeah.
And here's a quote. I found this very interesting. Alexander, maybe you can do a better job pronouncing that.
Is that Solzhenitsyn?
That sounds good to me.
We'll go with that.
He was a Russian novelist. He lived from 1918 to 2008. He was a philosopher and a historian.
Mm-hmm.
short story writer and a political prisoner.
Yes.
He was an outspoken critic of the Soviet Union and communism, and basically he helped raise the global awareness of the gulag
yes.
under communism and yeah. the labor camp system. And he talks about how communists are all about rewriting the history of existing nations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what does he say there in that little quote?
All right, quoting him, he says, "To destroy a people, you must first sever their roots."
And then George Orwell, who warned of totalitarian regimes
oh, yeah.
in his famous book, 1984, says the same thing.
Yep.
What does George Orwell say there?
"The most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history."
Now, is that not what's happening?
That's exactly what's going on.
So the class warfare card is in play.
Mm-hmm.
America already being somewhat vulnerable to that. And now the second card that's being played is this historical revisionism.
Yes.
I mean, what the United States is experiencing right now is part of a longstanding plan
right.
and program used by communists to topple existing cultures. Now, people say, well, come on, communism. I mean, these protests going on. You know, Black Lives Matter and these kinds of things, you're not going to really link them to communism, are you? Well, we have this article from Breitbart by Kyle Morris, June 22nd, 2020. And the title of it is "Black Lives Matter Co-Founder in 2015, and this is a direct quote, "We are trained Marxists."
That's what it says.
And so what's that article about?
Yeah, so we're not making this up. No. This is what they're saying about themselves. Here
exactly.
we go. "A short but wide-ranging 2015 interview with Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Cullors revealed that many of those within the movement, including Cullors, considered themselves to be, quote, trained Marxists, close quote. In a moment of discussion regarding the lack of ideological direction within the movement, she argued that the movement does, quote, have an ideological frame, close quote. Then she goes on to quote, "Myself and Alicia Garza in particular are trained organizers," close quote. She said in an interview with the Real News Network, and finally quoting, we are trained Marxists. We are, watch this, super versed on sort of ideological theories, close quote.
So this is not us making an accusation
no.
against
no.
them. This is what they're saying about themselves. And that's why we're linking this destruction and vandalism of historical monuments to Marxism.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of a Marxist strategy.
Right.
And Black Lives Matter and their involvement in all of this is nothing more than a communist tactic.
They're bedfellows.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, oh, come on, they're just statues. I mean, why get upset about a statue?
Right.
Well, we have this article here
yes.
by, I'm not sure how to pronounce that first name, but the last name is Duke from the New American. And the title of this particular article, June the 24th, 2020, is "Toppled Statues to Toppled Republic? A Venezuelan issues a deja vu warning." Now, we all know what happened to Venezuela. It was
yes.
a wealthy country. And
yes.
it was victimized by a communist revolution and ultimately came under the control of one Hugo Chavez. And this particular woman is saying this is exactly what they did, the communists did, related
right.
to statues related to that culture.
Yes.
On the eve of the communist revolution in Venezuela. And she says the same thing's happening right now in the United States.
That's what she says.
So you better pay attention is what she's saying.
That's right.
So talk to us about that article.
All right. Quoting, "When systems fall, so do statues," close quote, noted Russian Beyond in 2012. "It follows from this that statues fall can portend your systems failing or falling. This brings us to a viral video from a Venezuelan woman," she probably knows a little something about
yeah,
this.
Speaking from experience.
Yeah, "who warns, don't think it can't happen here. Elizabeth Rogliani, excuse me, a Venezuelan actress living in the United States, has seen it, a left-wing revolution before. Quote, "Why do I even worry about some silly little statues coming down or some silly little street names changing? Why do I care?" she asked rhetorically in her video. Quote, "It's because the last time I didn't care about this, I was a teenager," she explained, and goes on, "I have already lived through this thing when I was living in Venezuela." Continuing her quote, "Statues came down. Socialist leader Hugo Chavez didn't want the history displayed," she continued. "And then he changed the street names. Then came the curriculum in schools. Then some movies couldn't be shown on certain TV channels, and so on and so forth." I'm still quoting now. "You guys say it can't happen to you. I've heard this so many times. But always be on guard. Never believe that something can't happen to you," she implored. Quoting again, "You need to guard your country and your society or it will be destroyed. And there's clearly a lot of people wanting to destroy the U.S., she concluded with an obvious but chilling note. And now that's a close quote. Note also that Rogliani said of her native land's deadly complacency that, quote, "Cubans warned us, and we're like, we're Venezuelans. We know what freedom is like. That's not going to happen here." Yet it happened. Close quote. Perhaps they thought Venezuelan exceptionalism would save them. But here's the first rule. If you're saying, quote, "What's the big deal about some statues coming down?" you're already lost. Or you've already lost. Statutes are symbols of your culture. Their destruction is symbolic of your culture's destruction. Yet, since there's no such thing as an acultural civilization, this also means your culture is being replaced. In this vein, the widespread toppling of statues often reflects the later stages of tyranny's descent. In fact, it typically occurs in the wake of a victory, such as when the USSR collapsed and Lenin and Stalin statutes were felled. In our time and place, it symbolizes victory too. The left's triumph in the culture war, quoting, "The reality is that there is no culture war," I wrote in 2012. "What is occurring now is a pacification effort," close quote. Ironically, two sentences before this, I alluded to restaurant chain Chick-fil-A's opposition to the cultural revolutionaries. And now, 8 years on, chain CEO Dan Cathy is bowing before neo-Marxist group Black Lives Matter. "He has been absorbed," she says. This pacification effort's success is why even many conservatives, virtually all famous figures, and seemingly even big businesses are showing Black Lives Matter obeisance. Either they believe the lies or are intimidated into silence. I'm quoting now, I think I misstated, it wasn't her. Let me go back. I'm quoting Selwyn Duke. Selwyn Duke, okay? Mm-hmm. Just make sure that we're clear on that. So he says, everything they believe... Either they believe the lies or are intimidated into silence, fearing reputational or career and financial destruction or worse. They've either become pod people or fear their wrath. And he finally goes on and says, regardless, the result is silence before metastasizing tyranny, and silence equals submission. This is why we must defend our culture. It's why statues' lives matter.
So, it can't happen here.
Yeah.
Well, she was told that as a little girl.
Boy.
By the Cubans.
Yep.
Venezuelan exceptionalism will protect us.
Yep. Sounds
just
familiar.
Like, just like we say American exceptionalism will protect us. Why get worked up over statues and street names changing? I mean, it's just Aunt Jemima syrup after all.
Right.
Mary Poppins, Gone with the Wind. No big deal.
Yep.
Why get worked up about that? The reason to get worked up about it is because we're dealing here with the testimony of someone that lived through this whole thing.
Exactly.
Exactly what Hugo Chavez did Yeah. A few statues came down. Street names were changed. And the reason why you have to pay attention to this is it's part of the Marxist playbook of wiping a culture clean, wiping the memory of a culture clean so you can replace it with your version of how things ought to be, which in this case would be Marxism or communism. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you see Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, the founder of Chick-fil-A, taking a knee.
Oh, boy.
This particular Venezuelan woman, who at one time was a teenager in Venezuela during the communist revolution, he says you got to pay attention to the symbols because symbols mean something.
That's exactly right.
That's the sign of obeisance, and it's also the sign of conquest.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, we're not even in a culture war anymore.
That's exactly right.
What we have is a bunch of people scared to death, and so they're pacifying the enemy by taking the knee.
Yeah.
And that's how her culture was undermined.
Yeah.
So what else should we add to that?
Whew. Wow. Well, I mean, this point here is well made too, that said that, you know, that says you've already lost if you have that mentality. And she, the author rather just indicates here that there's no such thing as an acultural civilization.
Right.
You know, you can't wipe out culture and no culture come up behind it.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
That's exactly right.
I mean, they're replacing it with something.
Yeah, and they know what they're replacing it with.
Now, Alan Dershowitz, not exactly Alan. A member of the right-wing conspiracy, RealPolitics.com in an article by Ian Schwartz, August 22nd, 2017, Dershowitz on statues. Liberals are doing what Stalin did, erasing history.
Yes.
And what does Alan Dershowitz say there?
All right. He writes, of course there's a danger of going too far. There's a danger removing Washington and Jefferson and other of the founding fathers who themselves own slaves. I just have to pause here. It's very interesting that even these far left liberals recognize that this is going further than we realize, right?
Even Meghan McCain has this.
Even Meghan McCain, yeah. So continuing, he goes on. Look, we have to use this as an educational moment. We have to take some of the statues that were put up more recently, for example, during the Civil Rights Movement, and perhaps move them to museums where they can be used to teach young students about how statues are intended sometimes for bad purposes, to glorify negatives and to hold back positive developments. But the idea of willy-nilly going through and doing what Stalin did, just erasing history and rewriting it to serve current purposes, does pose a danger, and it poses a danger of educational malpractice, of missing opportunities to educate people, and of going too far. That's what we just said.
Yeah, that's why those historical markers were there in the land of Israel.
Exactly.
For purposes of education. And here Alan Dershowitz himself is saying what the left is doing concerning the destruction of these historical monuments is Stalin-esque.
Yeah.
Communism.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're conservatives here saying this, so we're going to get bashed for it.
Right.
But this is Alan Dershowitz saying this.
And Meghan McCain.
And Meghan.
Even they recognize something's not right. Now, the thing that's about this eradication of history, the communists are not the only people that have done this.
Right.
Virtually every tin pot dictator that's worth his or her salt has tried this. And at the time of our American Revolution, roughly the same time, there was another revolution taking place in France, the French Revolution.
Yeah.
And our revolution was all about freedom and inalienable rights. The revolution taking place in France was about bringing in the Enlightenment. In other words, erasing anything related to God or Christianity so Enlightenment can come. And the blood ran there in France. And here we have this quote from Gary DeMar's American Christian Heritage speaking about the obliteration of history that took place during that French Revolution.
Yeah, I would say it was the so-called Enlightenment.
Yes, but, that's right.
Quoting DeMar, the seven-day week, now he's talking about the French Revolution, see how much sense this makes to you. The seven-day week was replaced with a week of 10 days, with the result that Sunday as a day of rest and Christian worship was eliminated. The French calendar was also changed to reflect the new anti-Christian spirit of the Revolution. Quoting, the convention voted on October 5th, 1793, to abolish the Christian calendar and introduce a Republican calendar. Now, then we're not talking about the Republican American. The founding of the Republic on September 22nd, 1792, was the beginning of the new era and a new year one. Instead of the birth of Jesus Christ being the focal point of history, the founding day of the new French Republic would define how time would be kept. And that's Gary DeMar's America's Christian Heritage.
So what they did in the French Revolution is, first of all, they got rid of the seven-day week. Because that comes from the Bible.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's erase that and make it a 10-day week. By the way, Rabbi Lappin talks about this. When they did that, it had terrible societal consequences. Heart attacks went up. Divorces went up. Spousal abuse went up. Mm-hmm. I mean, virtually every negative indicator that you could think of went up. And that's because they're disrespecting the design of God.
No day of rest.
No day of rest. You work 6 days and rest on the seventh. And even they even got rid of A.D. and B.C.
Yeah.
You know, A.D., year of our Lord. And they got rid of that and just started everything at year one. And so this idea of erasing history doesn't have good origins. You see it also taking place in the French Revolution. In fact, here's a excerpt from a book called What If Jesus Had Never Been Born by the late D. James Kennedy and also by Jerry Newcomb describing the same thing.
All right, quoting, when it comes to liberty of conscience, religious liberty and civil liberty, it is interesting to note the vast difference between the American Revolution and the French Revolution. So, in their revolution, the French cracked down on the church and confiscated its properties. They desecrated the altar at Notre Dame by placing atop it a naked woman, the symbol of reason. They did away with Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, and made 1792 their year one, the first of the Republic, a Republic without God, and soon a Republic that was subject to chaos, anarchy, and finally tyranny, close quote.
So they trashed the altar at Notre Dame, they got rid of B.C., A.D., year of our Lord, 1792 became year one. And I guess the point I'm trying to make with all of this is this desecration of historical monuments is part of a well-established blueprint.
Right.
I mean, you see it in the French Revolution. Mm-hmm. You see it in, you know, communist takeovers of cultures. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're in the throes of here.
Right.
And the eyewitnesses from Venezuela are telling us you better that we're there when all of this was happening.
That's so exactly
you Americans don't even have the foggiest idea what you're dealing with. You know, you better pay attention.
If you want to get the right perspective, go down to Miami and talk to some Cubans.
That's exactly right.
Talk to some Venezuelans.
That's right. People that have lived it.
Yeah, that's right.
And this needs to be reiterated. So we move away from this, you know, Marxist strategy to number four here on our outline. I just call this selective outrage. And what I mean by that is this issue of erasing, they're doing this under the guise of we're erasing America's racist past.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that's not what they're doing.
No.
They're not at war with racist history. What they're at war with is American history.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that by their blatant double standard.
Exactly, yes.
For example, they have defaced the Lincoln Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
I was just there a year ago, and it was a beautiful sight and very heartwarming, and looking at it now almost brings tears to my eyes because they've just completely ruined it and destroyed it. Now, why are they going after that when it was Lincoln that freed the slaves? I mean, I thought Lincoln was on the side of ending racial oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows me that they're not just after racist history. They're after American history.
Exactly.
And they've also done things to reminiscences of Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, here's Tucker Carlson FoxNews.com, July 23rd, 2020, talking about why are they attacking Teddy Roosevelt's statue.
Yeah.
What does it say there?
All right, quoting, Roosevelt was a famously decent man. In 1901, he invited his friend, black author and educator, Booker T. Washington, to dinner. No African American had ever eaten in the White House. Now watch this, folks. Democrats roared with rage at the idea. Mm-hmm. For the crime of having a meal with a black man, they attacked Teddy Roosevelt and his wife for the rest of their lives, close quote.
So why would you attack the remnants or the memorial or the statue of Teddy Roosevelt when Teddy Roosevelt helped in this area of racial oppression? Why would you attack the Lincoln Memorial? Why would you attack the statue that was featured on the news last night, the Emancipation Statue? Mm-hmm. When all of those statues are there to celebrate how we got over our racist past,
right,
and slavery past, because they're not at war with racist history from America. No. They're at war with American history itself.
Exactly.
And they want to just wipe the culture clean so they can replace it with something else.
Right. It's really, and look at all these teaching opportunities that they lose by doing this.
Absolutely.
It's sad.
And, you know, when we talk about a double standard, you know it's a double standard because nobody has gone after Charles Darwin.
Yeah.
Here's an article from discern.com. It's an opinion piece by Peter Heck. June 23rd, 2020, since we're canceling people for racism, can we talk about Charles Darwin? Now, Darwin, as people know, is the only view of origins that's even allowed today in the public school system. And what you have to understand about Darwin is Charles Darwin was one of the most racist people that ever lived.
Exactly.
Now, how do we know that? Well, we have the title of his book. Most people don't know the full title of the book.
What is that title, Pastor?
Well, when you get edited copies or later editions, it clips out the subtitle.
Right.
But it's easy to find online. You can see what the book was actually titled in 1859, On the Origin of the Species. Here is the full title. On the Origin of the Species by Means of Natural Selection or The Preservation of the Favored Races.
What?
In the Struggle for Life. So here in his title, he's talking about favored races.
Hmm.
And if that doesn't sound racial, I don't really know what is. Where is the war on Charles Darwin? Well, we can't go after him because, you see, Charles Darwin is the friend of communism.
Mm-hmm.
Because Karl Marx wrote one of his volumes, Das Kapital, and he dedicated it to Charles Darwin. Because Darwin gave him the reason for dismissing the Creator from the thinking of people. I mean, the great problem of the atheist is how do you explain creation without a Creator?
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Charles Darwin, you helped solve that for me. So I'm going to dedicate my volume, Karl Marx says, Das Kapital, to Charles Darwin. So if these folks were really against racism, they would go after Charles Darwin. But you see, it's selective outrage.
Yeah.
They're not after, you know, racist history. They're after American history.
Exactly.
Because their goal is to topple the United States and replace it with something which in their minds is better. And the reason why there's a connection between Darwinism and racism is because under Darwinism, you can say that the Caucasian or white race is more highly evolved than the black race.
Mm-hmm.
So the monkeys are here, the blacks are here, and the whites are here, and that's why white people are smarter than black people.
And that's exactly what Darwin said.
That's right. Now, you can't believe that if you're a Bible believer.
Right.
Because the Bible on page one,
yeah,
Genesis chapter 1 verse 27 says all people, male and female, regardless of race, are beings made in God's image.
That's right.
But Darwinism itself furnishes the philosophical basis for racism. In fact, Ben Stein came out with a movie, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And the title of it is Expelled.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No Intelligence Allowed.
Yeah.
And he talks about the end of the movie. He documents how Darwinism was used by Hitler
mm-hmm.
to say that the Jewish race was less evolved than the Aryan
yep.
race.
Yep.
So Darwin provided the philosophical basis for the Holocaust,
right.
just like Darwinism provides the philosophical basis for racism.
Yep.
So if people are really anti-racism, they would go after Charles Darwin, but they will never do that.
Right.
Because Charles Darwin furnishes the philosophical basis for Marxism,
exactly.
which is what they're all interested in.
Exactly.
And you know, that's a long article, which we don't have time to read, but why don't you just read that underlined section? Because Darwin in his own words describes his racist perspective.
All right.
And you have some underlining there. If you want to read that too, feel free.
I've got so much underlined, yeah. I better not. I'm going to back up just one paragraph. He says, in case you're wondering, Darwin left no confusion as to the identity of those lesser humans that would be annihilated. Now you need to go back and read this whole article. But anyway, he wrote that when this happens, quoting now, the break between man and his nearest allies will then be wider, for it will intervene between man in a more civilized state, as we may hope, even than the Caucasian, and some ape as low as a baboon, instead of, as now, between the Negro or Australian and the gorilla, close quote.
So whites are here,
mm-hmm.
blacks are here,
yep.
apes are here.
Yep, that's what he says.
And that's why they need to be subjugated, enslaved, mm-hmm. mistreated.
Yep, yep.
Looked at as not as intelligent as white people.
Well, can I read this last
part? Please, please, please.
He goes and he says, the author now says, you got that right? Darwin is saying at that moment, what we just read, the evolutionary gap between our least evolved humans,
mm-hmm.
the quote, Negro or Australian, and a gorilla is small. Now that's your Darwin.
That's right. And then we have this quote by myself.
Oh, I've been waiting for this.
Yeah, one. Dr. Andy Woods of Sugarland Bible Church. Why am I quoting myself? Well, a friend of mine who I was on the radio with this morning, David Fiorazzo of Stand Up for the Truth, and people ought to think about looking at his website and, you know, listening to his show. You can get the archive of the show we did this morning there. It's called Stand Up for the Truth Radio. And he wrote a blog piece, and he quotes me on something I said on Facebook. And so since I was quoted by somebody else, I thought I would quote myself in our presentation today. How's that for Vanity?
Well, you know what we tell our kids? Don't put anything on Facebook
That's
that
right.
you don't want people to see. So
That's
here
right.
we go.
Yeah.
Quoting Dr. Andy Woods, the deliberate erasure of history is a Stalinist, Maoist tactic for purposes of destroying one civilization so that they can bring in their, quote, higher social order, communism, Marxism, statism. Beyond that, if you want to get rid of all vestiges of racism in the history of the United States, you would also have to get rid of the Democratic Party itself, which, let me repeat that, the Democratic Party itself, which is the party of the Jim Crow South, the KKK, and Robert Byrd.
Now, the first sentence summarizes our thesis here. It's part of what's really happening is a communist revolution.
Mm-hmm.
using the issue of race selectively to whitewash American history.
Yeah.
And that makes the communist takeover easy. And the communists have done this everywhere.
Yes.
And the second part of it, it demonstrates the intellectual dishonesty of how they use this tactic. They say, we just want to get rid of racist past of America. Well, then why don't you go after the Democratic Party itself? Because the KKK came to us from the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. The Jim Crow South came to us from the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Republican Party that's the party of Lincoln.
That's right.
That from its inception wanted to free the slaves.
Right.
And in fact, the Democrats, in fact, I remember when he was alive and he was the majority leader of the United States Senate. He was the head guy of the Democrats in the Senate, a guy named Robert Byrd, Sometimes he's called Sheets Bird because you can find him on older clips. It's very easy to find of him in his fully orbed Klan gown.
Imagine that.
And there's Hillary Clinton praising him, Bill Clinton praising him. And so my question for all of these people that want to purify America's racist past is how come these issues never come up?
Boy, isn't that the truth.
And how come they never go after Margaret Sanger of Planned Parenthood, who basically started Planned Parenthood for the purpose of depopulating or decreasing the size of the black race. And she's in print calling black people weeds and... things of that nature. In fact, you can find all kinds of pictures of her online in her day giving presentations and speeches also to fully orbed, fully uniformed Klansmen.
Yep.
So you really want to get rid of racism. We got to get rid of the Democratic Party. We got to get rid of Robert Byrd and remembrances of him. We got to get rid of the Democratic Party itself, Planned Parenthood itself. And yet, why don't they do that? Because they don't really care about the issue of racism.
No.
What they care, and by the way, how come they never go after mosques?
Hmm.
Isn't there a historical connection between Islam and slavery?
No, well, look out now.
And isn't it true that slavery is basically used even today. In Islamic countries.
Yep.
In fact, here's something I saw in a recent article. There are 94 nations today that still have laws on their books promoting or legalizing slavery. There are, Brother Jim,
possible?
Look at this, 40 million people today on planet Earth that are still being subjugated by slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really interested in remedying racial oppression, why would you keep attacking the only one of the few countries on the face of the earth that actually did something about it?
I agree.
Well, the issue is they're being dishonest.
Right.
They're using the issue selectively to promote an alternative agenda.
It's that point of tension you mentioned. They're using that point of tension.
Yes.
In America.
Yeah.
But they have an ulterior motive.
Exactly. And here's something I learned from Curtis Bowers as he was dealing with Marxism and critiquing it. A communist defector told him this. And if you can memorize this, it's very helpful. You'll understand an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
To the Marxist, quote, the issue is never the issue.
Right.
But the revolution.
Right.
In other words, they don't really care about racism.
Right.
What they care about is using the issue selectively to usher in a communist revolution.
Right.
They'll do the same thing with feminism. They don't care about women's rights.
Right.
If they really cared about women's rights, they'd be speaking out against the subjugation of women in Islamic countries.
Yeah.
They would be speaking out against Bill Clinton, who groped, mauled, raped, I don't know what all, countless women. They want to use that against Clarence Thomas.
Yep, that's right.
But not Bill Clinton. Why? Because the issue is never the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, the issue is the revolution. And so that's what I mean here by selective outrage, number four.
Whew.
Anything you want to add before we go here to number five? And let's just keep moving here, see if we can tie this up. Number five is this is something that has been happening for a long time. In other words, the defacing of the United States of America and, you know, all of our historical monuments, the defacing of the nation, this didn't just start 2 weeks ago.
Right.
It may have been brought to full fruition the last couple of weeks, but this has been going on for an awful long time. You'll notice that we have an article here from Bray Payton, August 17th, look at the date on this, 2017.
Almost 3 years ago.
From thefederalist.com. And in this particular article, this author talks about all of the monuments and the statues that they were trying to tear down back in 2017.
Yeah.
It's a long article, so let me just read the statues that have been in their sites for marked for destruction for a long time. The Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C., statues in the Capitol. It's a great article because it lists all of the people, Al Sharpton, Cory Booker, Nancy Pelosi, and how they were arguing for this stuff, you know, several years ago. Mount Rushmore has been targeted, so The View is not the first to target it. Several monuments in Baltimore, Stone Mountain, Albert Pike statue in Washington, D.C. They're after Chicago parks named after Washington and Jackson, Confederate Soldiers Monument in Durham,
North
Carolina.
I have to stop you for a second. On that one, on the Chicago parks, that's a Chicago pastor.
Oh my goodness.
That's doing that. A Chicago pastor asked for the mayor to remove the names of two former presidents, George Washington and Andrew Jackson.
Why doesn't he go out and preach the gospel? Instead of wasting his time with this stuff.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Number eight is Confederate Soldiers Monument in Durham, North Carolina. Monuments throughout the state of North Carolina. Monuments throughout the state of Virginia. The Old Joe statue in Gainesville, Florida, statues in Lexington, Kentucky, statues in Louisville, Kentucky, statues in Nashville, Tennessee, including one on private property.
Private property,
Two statues vandalized in Wilmington, North Carolina, a cemetery marker in Los Angeles. So this has been going on for an awful long time. And beyond that, when you look at our United States Supreme Court, I think this is slide number 14, our legal system itself is built on the concept of historical revisionism. Can you read the decision here in School of District of Abington Township versus Shimp, 1963, and you'll start to get a flavor of how our judiciary is really a mastermind in historical revisionism. And by the way, that was the case that through Bible reading and prayer, completely out of the school, on the basis of this alleged separation between church and state.
Right. Quoting, finally, in Engel versus Vitale, only last year, these principles were so universally recognized that the court, without the citation of a single case, reaffirm them, close quote.
See, in the legal system, you're supposed to make decisions based on precedent. In other words, similarly situated cases and how they were decided. Well, here the court says, you know, we're going to get rid of Bible reading and prayer, throw it out of school, and we believe so much in the separation between church and state that we don't even have to cite a single case. Now, here's a fascinating chart. This was put together by David Barton in his book, The Myth of Separation, and he's quoting subsequent decisions. In other words, decisions that sort of came out and built on what the court did in Engel versus Vitale and Abington Township versus Shimp. And he's got similar cases that went that same direction, and he's got citations there. How many of those citations come before 1947, and how many come after 1947? 1947 is a big deal because that's the famous case, a Board of Education, where essentially what happened there is they brought into the First Amendment for the very first time into the Establishment Clause, the separation between church and state. So voila, it's made up out of whole cloth. And so what courts do is they just cite that 1947 statute or decision and pretend that American history started in 1947. So you'll notice Levitt versus Committee, zero pre-1947 citations, 18 post-1947. Committee versus Nyquist did the same thing, throwing Christianity out of the public square. One citation pre-1947, 99 citations post-1947. Now, Stone versus Graham, that's where they said you can't hang the Ten Commandments on the schoolhouse wall. 1980, zero pre-1947 citations, nine post-1947 citations, Marsh versus Chambers, same idea, 1982, only one pre-1947 citation, and 32 post-1947 citations. Do you see, Brother Jim, the power of historical revisionism? And my point in bringing this up is all this stuff with historical revisionism has gone on a long time.
Yeah.
It's just it got exasperated and compounded with the vandalism that we've seen in the last couple weeks. In fact, there's a great book on this by sociologist Paul Vitz, and the title of it is Censorship, Evidence of Bias in Our Children's Textbooks, and this was written in 1986. And basically the premise of the book is ever since education became federalized. Ever since we had a Department of Education that came into existence through Jimmy Carter. And the feds got control of education. He documents that slowly but surely what started getting removed is the writings of our founding fathers, particularly any reference they made to our great Judeo-Christian history. So historical revisionism is nothing new. You know, this has been going on an awful long time. And it's amazing how effective historical revisionism is. Because when you look at a painting with the founding fathers on it, by the way, how many delegates were there to the Constitutional Convention? There were 55 delegates. And from what denominational background did these delegates come from? Do you mind reading those numbers to us? This comes from, William Federer's post, entitled, Was the Constitution Ratified by Christian States?
All right, so we have 55 delegates. Here's the breakdown. 26 Episcopalians, 11 Presbyterians, 7 Congregationalists, 2 Lutherans, 2 Dutch Reformed, 2 Methodists, 2 Quaker, 2 Roman Catholic, and Dr. Franklin.
So, 55 delegates, all coming from Christian denominations, only 2 Roman Catholics, and if you look at a painting of the Founding Fathers, what 2 Founding Fathers can everybody recognize? Most of people have never heard of these other delegates, but they can recognize in an instant Benjamin Franklin. And Thomas Jefferson. Now, is it not interesting that through our humanistic educational system, we have been trained to identify those 2 founding fathers, and they happen to be the 2 least religious founding fathers?
That's true.
That's the power of historical revisionism. We're all victims of it. In fact, a lot of people will point out Thomas Jefferson when the fact of the matter is Thomas Jefferson wasn't even in the country.
When
the Constitution was ratified. Did you know that?
Wasn't he in France?
He was in France. See, most people don't know that. In fact, he says that in one of his letters, from the writings of Thomas Jefferson. And this is a letter to Joseph Priestley. June the 19th, 1802. What does he say there?
Quoting here, one passage in the paper you enclose me must be corrected. It is the following. And all say it was yourself more than any other individual that planned and established it, that is, the Constitution. I was in Europe when the Constitution was planned and never saw it till after it was established, close quote.
Now, of course, he wrote the Declaration of Independence, but he had nothing to do with the Constitution. So when you look at a painting or a mural of the Founding Fathers, who do we immediately pick out? Franklin, who was probably the least religious of the Founding Fathers, although he said a lot of statements that seemed to harmonize well with the Bible, we'll be talking about at this church a couple of weeks down the road. And we're also trained to pick out Thomas Jefferson, when Thomas Jefferson himself says, I wasn't even there. Now, when you think about that, that is the power of historical revisionism. We have been so brainwashed by humanistic education. And what has been happening the last couple of weeks is just a further outgrowth of it. Mm-hmm. But this is a long-term strategy that's been used for a long time mm-hmm. to erase America's past. Mm. In fact, we have this excerpt, and we're actually on our final page there, folks, so hang in there with us, from David Barton's original intent. And he talks about, catch this, Brother Jim, the anti-slavery movement.
What?
Which existed at the time our Constitution was adopted.
Hmm.
Did you know that slavery itself was a divisive issue all the way back then? I thought every one of these people owned slaves.
Yeah.
And what does David Barton here say on in his book, Original Intent? And he quotes a few founding fathers along the way.
All right. Many of the founding fathers who had owned slaves as British citizens released them in the years following America's separation from Great Britain. And then it lists some names. George Washington, John Dickinson, Caesar Rodney, William Livingston, George White, John Randolph of Roanoke, and others. Furthermore, many of the founders had never owned any slaves.
Wow.
For example, John Adams proclaimed, "My opinion against it," meaning slavery, "has always been known. Never in my life did I own a slave." Quoting later, "As much as I value a union of all the states," this is George Mason speaking,
mm-hmm.
"I would not admit the southern states into the union unless they agree to the discontinuance of this disgraceful trade." And he was talking about slavery. And then Benjamin Rush, quoting him, "Domestic slavery is repugnant to the principles of Christianity. It is rebellion against the authority of a common father. It is a practical denial of the extent and efficacy of the death of a common savior. It is a usurpation of the prerogative of the great sovereign of the universe who has solemnly claimed an exclusive property in the souls of men." That's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Jay said the following, "For many of the founders, their feelings against slavery went beyond words. For example, in 1774, Benjamin Rush and Benjamin Franklin helped found America's first anti-slave society. And John Jay was mm-hmm. president of a similar society in New York." And then finally here, "Other prominent founding fathers who were members of societies for ending slavery included Richard Bassett, James Madison, James Monroe." Are any of these names familiar, mm-hmm. folks? Bushrod Washington, Charles Carroll, William Few, John Marshall, Richard Stockton, Zephaniah Swift, and many more. In fact, based in part on the efforts of these founders, Pennsylvania and Massachusetts took decisive steps to end slavery in 1780. Connecticut and Rhode Island did so in 1784. Vermont in 1786. New Hampshire in 1792, New York in 1799, and New Jersey did so in 1804.
So, my goodness, Brother Jim, did you know that many of our founding fathers released their slaves after the War of Independence?
And that's something.
That never comes out, does it?
Mm.
Did you know that many of them never owned slaves to begin with?
Yeah.
Did you know that many of them were outspoken critics of slavery, not, you know, light people at all.
No.
Heavy hitters, I'm trying to say. John
yeah.
Adams.
Yeah.
George Mason, the father of the Bill of Rights, father yeah. of the Second Amendment. Benjamin Rush. Did you know about the anti-slavery societies?
No.
Started by Benjamin Rush, Benjamin Franklin, John Jay. Did you know all of these other founding fathers that were against the owning of slaves? Bassett, Madison.
Mm.
Monroe, Bushrod Washington, Carroll, Few, John Marshall, Richard Stockton, Zephaniah Swift. And did you know about all these states, a lot of them on the East Coast?
Look at that.
That got rid of slavery lickety-split.
Yeah.
Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, New York, New Jersey. I mean, why don't we know any of this? Because the Marxists have been at work for a long time on this issue of historical
right.
revisionism.
Yeah.
And the only thing you've seen on your television screens the last couple of weeks, you know, is basically the latest version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been going on for an awful long time.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, I was listening to one person. He said that 3/4 of our founding fathers were against slavery. Mm. 1/4 were in favor of it. The 1/4 in the South won, or else we wouldn't have had a constitution. It never would have been ratified. And so what our founding fathers did is they kicked the can down the road, mm-hmm. and let a subsequent generation handle the issue. And they were vindicated, mm-hmm. because the issue got resolved with the Civil War,
yeah.
and the post-Civil War amendments to the United States Constitution.
Right.
But that's an accurate interpretation of American history.
Right.
Most people don't know this.
Right.
They just mindlessly run around, in the case of Black Lives Matter, vandalizing and attacking statues. Mm. Thinking everything in America is racist. So, anyway, that's quite a lengthy presentation on cancel the culture.
Mm.
We've looked at the destruction of historical monuments, the biblical view of historical monuments, how this is part of a Marxist strategy, how the outrage is very selective.
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on for a long, long time. Really, the last thing, Brother Jim, is what do we do about it exactly? And I like to use this quote here from Ronald Reagan. And what does he say there?
He says, if we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
If we forget our Judeo-Christian heritage, we won't be a nation for much longer.
Right.
The communists understand this.
Yes.
Reagan himself understood this. So what do we do? I think we need to just teach history.
Yes, sir.
I think it's one thing to complain about the public schools, but our parents, as Joshua 4 says, transferring culture to their children through teachable moments.
Yeah.
Our grandparents teaching their grandkids about the culture of the United States, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
through teachable moments.
Yeah.
And our pastors talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here at Sugarland Bible Church, the Sunday following the 4th of July, July the 5th, I'm going to be doing a teaching on mm-hmm. 11 things that made America great.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so much ground to cover, I'll have to do part one in Sunday school and part two in the service that follows.
That's right.
So I would encourage people to tune into that if they're looking for some resources
mm-hmm. yes.
by which they can teach others these great truths of American history. And of course, beyond that, we can always be in prayer. 1 Timothy 2:1-4 tells us to do that. And even beyond that, we have Titus 2:13, which tells us that, you know, our hope as Christians does not rise or fall according to the prosperity of the United States.
Correct.
It's centered on Jesus, who is going to come back through his great appearing yes. and rescue us from the wrath to come. So right. things are not right. falling apart, as we like to say. they're falling into place.
Yes, that's
but anyway, that's our analysis today of defacing the nation. And hopefully we gave people sort of a perspective on some of the things they've been seeing, because this rash of vandalism and attacks on these monuments, it might seem perplexing to people,
mm-hmm.
but there's an ideological and spiritual reasons
right.
for it. And what do you have to say?
Well, I just think that probably one of the most important things you brought up in this episode was the fact that the agenda is not what you think it is.
Yes.
That the ideas we're putting forth, that this is all about racism, and that has nothing to do with the real agenda out there. And it's just a tension point that's being used.